From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I think there is a little pathetic political theater and drama here. So we're still on track. I think, you know, we can always re-vote on the pension bill, which went down. Obviously, they need our help on that one. We're prepared to deliver that on significant pension reform, as well as the others. So I think a little drama, but not the end of the world.
I think that by calling these votes, I in a way, I took her out of her misery. She wants the vote go forward, her caucus is telling her not, and we finally started calling some bills, right? The story, though, is that her caucus is not ready to vote, not our caucus.
Speaker Madigan will try to sell his June 30th government shutdown proposal as a solution in case his daughter wins in court. But don't be fooled. It's not a solution. It's a crisis showdown set for June 30th.
I really can't figure out why the governor and the members on the Republican side are opposed to it. It's following the Constitution. It's appropriating money the way we're supposed to do it.
That's the Democratic State Representative Sue Shearer of Decatur. She's sponsoring a plan that would pay state workers even without a budget in place all the way till the end of the fiscal year. Governor Bruce Rauner, you heard from him. He's not a fan of that specific proposal. We'll talk about that. Also, we heard from the top Republican and the top Democrat in the state Senate talking about the so-called grand bargain. The first votes on that came this week, and zero Republican support was given to those. Is the grand bargain kaput? What's going on with the effort to get a budget compromise? And also, the race for governor in 2018 gets more crowded. We'll discuss it all in today's show. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and in studio with me is Charlie Wheeler. He's the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse Bureau, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio reporter, and our guest today, Jordan Abadea. She is the Statehouse reporter for WICS-TV in Springfield, Channel 20. And Jordan, thanks for being back on with us again.
Thanks for having me.
Brian and Jordan, I'll throw this to you first. What happened with this highly anticipated attempt to break the budget logjam through the state Senate? It started this week and seemed to fizzle.
Yeah, this is, I think, by my count, the third time that that we've sort of had a deadline. People have said, we're going to do it, in lame duck session. We're going to do it by the end of January. And then come back February 7th, we're going to vote on these. And Senate President Cullerton finally moved ahead and did that. This proposal has changed a lot on some areas. In some areas, it's been quite static. The areas where it has changed is, you know, what the income tax rate should be, what other taxes should be. There were talk of taxing sugary beverages, sodas, that sort of thing. That's been dropped. And now we're looking at expanding the sales tax in Illinois to include some services, as well as removing the state exemption that had taken the state sales tax off food and pharmaceuticals and drugs, things like that. A lot of those details are yet to be worked out. What the Democrats decided to do is, you know what, let's get going on this. They put the less controversial, more agreed-to items, like changing the state's procurement code. Listeners are falling asleep throughout the area right now, but things like that, as well as a pension overhaul, which is not quite as boring. That one actually failed, but 18 Democrats did support it. The big takeaway, though, is that both sides are saying, at least, that things are still on track.
We've heard a lot of people saying that we need to keep negotiating this deal, particularly by Republicans who say there are some still some things we need to work out. We are still negotiating this deal. And I think what we're hearing from Democrats at this point is we can continue negotiating deals for the rest of session, but at some point the deal has to be done and we have to take a vote. And so I think we're at that critical point where Democrats might think that this deal is good enough. Nobody's going to be completely happy with it, but they might think it's ready to be voted on. Whereas I think Republicans that we talk to, specifically on workers' compensation reform and the school funding reform bill, want to see more negotiations and want to see that further fleshed out.
Charlie, do you think this is there's something to that in the fact that maybe everybody wants to make sure this thing is right before it comes up for a vote, or is this some type of stall tactic?
Well, I think on the behalf of some of the people, it's a stall tactic. But on the other hand, as I've said on the show previously, I think you have to commend Senator Redonio and Senator Cullerton for finally trying to move this impasse, to do something to break it, and to bravely put forth a package of bills that does include a lot of stuff that their caucus members aren't going to be happy about voting for. The workers' compensation, I'm sure the bill won't go as far as the business community would like. By the same token, the pension reform is going to be very unpopular with people who are public employees. But in this kind of a situation, for folks to expect, well, we're not going to move anything until everything is perfect, I think that's a recipe for disaster, because you're never going to get perfect. There's an old saying that the best is the enemy of the good. And because of the crisis in which the state finds itself, I think, as I said, you have to take the route that Cullerton and Redonio are taking and try and move something forward. Those bills aren't going to be the final product. Assuming under the best of circumstances, they get through the Senate, they go to the House. The House can change them. There can be further negotiations as the process moves along. But to just sit back and wait for the perfect bill to come along, I think that's does a disservice to the state.
I do think that the Senate Republicans in particular are in a really tricky spot here, because they've got their traditional base of support in the business community. A number of big anti-tax organizations in the state are really pushing hard against this. And the biggest 8,000-pound gorilla in Illinois Republican politics right now, who's Governor Bruce Rauner, with his essentially unlimited amount of campaign money and a willingness to use it against people who cross him, is not saying where he stands on a lot of these individual proposals. He's paid lip service to saying how great it is that there's an attempt at bipartisan compromise, but he's also very carefully avoiding commenting on any of the specifics. And I think Republicans are worried about putting their votes on something that is going to be used against them, or even just kind of yanked out, have the rug yanked out from under them. And so they are in between a rock and a hard place. You know, on the one hand, everybody's telling them, wow, isn't it great you guys are joining with the Senate Democrats to be the grown-ups in state government right now, and the statesmen and women. And on the other hand, they're looking at, they have to watch their backs, because they're not sure what some of their allies might do.
Well, I know the governor has not commented publicly to this, but has there been any rumblings or behind the scenes talk that the governor is either working for or against this plan, or that he's weighed in at all to individual members?
I haven't heard that he's been rumbling about the plan at all. I do know that he's been treading very lightly around the topic because, again, if this plan starts to fall apart, this is the one chance that we've had at compromise in almost 2 years. If this plan starts to fall apart, he doesn't want to take the blame for that. It's much, much easier to let that plan pass the Senate, go to the House, and have Madigan stomp on it and let him take the blame for foiling this compromise. But, you know, what is interesting is that Republicans are getting pressure, and while it might not be from the governor himself, it is from groups that have closely aligned themselves with the governor. We've seen the Illinois Policy Institute take out ads against Republican senators who said that they would support a tax increase in order to get this compromise passed along with some reforms. And they're getting hammered very hard. I mean, Senator Redonio is getting slammed almost every day. Groups that are run by Dan Proft are also coming out very hard against this plan. And these are channels that have been very closely aligned with the governor or his campaign cash. And so while he himself might not be saying we don't want this deal, Republicans are coming under some stiff opposition to this deal.
I would say the governor is in a position of what's plausible deniability. But if you trace back the money, a lot of it comes from the governor and his friends that bankroll some of these organizations. Now, not the Chamber of Commerce or the Manufacturers Association, but people like the Illinois Policy Institute and that bunch of pseudo newspapers that Dan Proft has going, they get their money from the governor. And they are attempting to derail this deal. Why? I don't know.
Well, Charlie, let me ask you this, because I mean, one thing Rauner has done is he has come out on the record as saying he could support a tax increase if certain things are passed with it. The other groups you're talking about, they seem opposed to it under any circumstance. In fact, the Illinois Policy Institute, you know, I guess you'd call it their budget plan, had no tax increases in that. It was mainly calling for cuts and a few other things in it. Is it fair to lump Rauner in with some of these groups when he has basically come out and said, I would be willing to sign something in the right circumstance?
Well, I'll go back to something that was said a long time ago by Speaker Bill Redman, who was a Democratic speaker in this, 1970s. He said, "You dance with the guy what brung you." And he referred to the fact that he had been supported by Chicago Mayor Daley, and therefore he was going to be very receptive to the concerns of the city, even though he was from Bensonville, which is a suburb. So I would say if the folks who are getting Rauner's money are doing something that the governor is unhappy with, the governor would say, hey, don't do that. On the other hand, if they're doing things to make it harder on Republican senators to vote for something that seems like a reasonable compromise, you'd have to suspect that they're doing it with at least the tacit approval of the governor.
Well, next week, Governor Rauner will deliver his budget address. I guess this will be his third address. Brian and Jordan, what do we know so far regarding what he may put forth next week?
It seems like we're going to see this a similar address to what we saw last year. There are two paths for Illinois. We could, you know, again, pass a grand bargain, put some reforms in place, raise revenues, and try and balance this budget. Or you could give me some power and I'll cut the budget myself and we'll move on. That's what the governor prescribed last year. And it seems like he's going to give these two different paths another chance once again. Of course, he hasn't come out and said exactly what he's going to be proposing in terms of numbers and all of that. He's been a big proponent of education funding, and that's been increased in the last 2 years when he's given his budget address. So I'm sure we're going to see something to that effect. And of course, if we want to redo the school funding formula, more money is going to have to be poured into it to hold certain districts harmless. And so I think that's going to be a big part of the budget. But again, I mean, I think he's going to try very hard not to stomp on this compromise. And so he's going to talk around it and say, this is what we can do if we can come up with compromise. And here's how we move the state forward, which, you know, garners him some criticism at points because he factors in pension reform that's not in, or a contract with AFSCME that has not been approved, or things like that, like he's done in the past. So I'm sure there's going to be points like that where Democrats are going to say this isn't a balanced budget. And so I think it's going to be very similar to what we've seen the past couple of years.
And Brian, go ahead. I thought I know you've been following, too, that other people are putting out some reports that say Illinois is even in worse fiscal shape. It just keeps getting worse and worse. How does he address that?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, everybody liked to cite the rating agencies when they were talking about how terrible it was that Illinois wasn't dealing with its pension problem. And now the rating agencies are beating up. I mean, we saw a report this week that came about as close to directly attacking the governor as I've seen. It basically said, this is from Standard & Poor's, or I guess S&P Global is what they've branded themselves as now. They said, Illinois' fiscal crisis is, in our view, a man-made byproduct of policy ultimatums placed on the state's budget process. And that right there is the turnaround agenda. This is Governor Rauner has insisted that he will not negotiate on tax increases, which he says are necessary, as well as spending cuts, unless the Democratic-controlled legislature approves his business and other agenda items. And so we see the rating agencies kind of pulling their hair out, threatening Illinois. We've seen downgrades after downgrade in the past few years. That seems like it's going to continue. The fiscal situation is just getting worse. It boggles the mind how much interest alone we have to pay on our overdue bills, which are now in excess of $10 billion by the end of the budget year. I think $14, $15 billion is the estimate where that's going to be. We're just digging ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper. And will the governor address that? I don't know. It seems like something that he has preferred not to talk about as much.
Well, to be honest, I will be absolutely flabbergasted if the governor produces a true balanced budget, because that would require acknowledging the fact that we have this mountain of bills. It varies between $10 billion and $11 billion. And to try and put those into a budget proposal for FY18 means you have to make just unthinkable cuts or raise revenues. And the way the budget law, the statute is written now, governors are supposed to not count stuff that hasn't happened yet. They're not supposed to factor in, well, we can save $3.5 billion by this working together or executive management line item, which was in last year's budget, which in essence was what was described before. You give me what we what I'm asking for in the turnaround agenda, and we can increase revenues, or give me the authority to just cut everything as I see fit. So he has yet to produce a true balanced budget, and I don't expect it'll be any different next week, because to try and do it without revenue is virtually impossible. Now, the IPI put out this nice mathematical model where the numbers more or less added up, but in essence, they transferred a lot of the responsibility to local governments and school districts to pay some of the costs that the state's been paying. So that's, in the grand scheme of things, isn't a real savings.
Well, another thing we talked about at the start of the show, wanted to get in here, was state employee paychecks. This has been discussed before on the show, that the Attorney General is going to court to try to stop payment of the checks without a state budget in place. There is a court hearing on this next week. Brian, how soon, if she is successful with this, how soon could a state worker be impacted?
Well, she, in her request to the court, and again, a judge can do what he or she wants, but in her request, she suggested the end of February as the deadline for revoking the court order that has mandated state paychecks to go out. Now, different state employees are on different pay cycles, some monthly, I think some are biweekly. I'm sure people can know themselves what their pay cycle is. So I think her idea was allow them to get paid through the end of February. That gives, from when she filed it, about a month for legislators to continue working on this so-called grand bargain or something else to get this through. And so I guess if the judge rules right away or pretty quickly and takes that request of hers, then it could be that the March paychecks would be the first ones to be affected. Of course, as we said, the judge might not rule in her favor. The judge might take a longer timeline. The judge could take a shorter timeline. Well, all that remains to be seen.
But don't you think, Brian, even if the judge agrees with the Attorney General that, yeah, we can't pay people without an appropriation, that ruling would be appealed?
Sure. I think that's certainly possible. Who knows?
And it would be stayed so that the paychecks continue until the Supreme Court weighs in on the issue?
Which could be the whole session, maybe, before you'd know. Yeah. Possibly.
I mean, it could be. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We really just don't know how quickly the court could act. I mean, I think we saw a separate case, but in the federal courts, this whole immigration fight has already moved up through the appellate process within the span of a week, really a matter of a few days. So something big like this, you would expect the courts to give it more attention and sort of fast track it. But as what I do think we know is that Attorney General Madigan has made the point that this is, in her view, now after a year and a half somehow, is not constitutional. It's not a constitutional way to operate government. It's no way to run a railroad. And she is going to continue pushing because she says that this is the leverage. This is sort of the built-in leverage in our Constitution for the governor and the legislature to actually, you know, pass a budget, quaint as that notion sounds, in 2017.
And Jordan, the legislature, at least some lawmakers, want to take that pressure off. They want to pass legislation that would ensure that state employees do get paid. But there are some differences in the proposals that came up this week as well.
Democratic Representative Sue Scheer from Decatur has proposed a bill that actually passed out of committee just a couple of days ago that would make an appropriation like you're supposed to do when you're passing a budget. It's an appropriation for state worker pay, and it would only go through the end of this fiscal year so that if Attorney General Lisa Madigan does win her case, then there would be an appropriation to pay state workers and things would go on as normal. Now, the Republicans are proposing making state worker pay a continuing appropriation. Representative Avery Bourne out of Raymond is proposing that bill. And that is would make lawmakers around continuing appropriations so that every budget cycle, lawmakers wouldn't have to approve this line item. It would just automatically continue. That is part of the reason why, despite not having a budget, the state of Illinois is spending most of its money right now. We have continuing appropriations. We have court orders and consent decrees that have kept most of state government working, but it is also spending money at levels of revenue that the state is no longer bringing in. And so that has contributed to the backlog of bills growing to $11, $15 billion by the end of this fiscal year. And so those are two very interesting arguments. Governor Bruce Rauner released a video on Facebook this week saying he does not support the Democrats' plan. He calls it, I forget his exact words, but he made it sound sound like it was a doomsday plan by the end of session to stop paying state workers. And he is backing the House Republicans' plan and wants to make it a continuing appropriation, which raises some questions about whether that's fiscally responsible or not. But this is another political fight that's playing out, and state workers are the ones who are going to be caught in the middle of it.
What are the difficulties that I see with the bill is that it says it's a continuing appropriation, and it says it's the amount necessary for personnel expenditures as determined solely and exclusively by the state agency and the governor's Office of Management and Budget. State agency is then defined to mean any constitutional officer. So in essence, this legislation would give to the governor the ability to set the personnel services, the salaries basically, at whatever level he chose. So if he wanted to, he could say, okay, Attorney General, I don't like the way you're handling your office. We're going to cut your budget in half. So I think it's just a bad idea.
I actually talked to the governor's office on that very point, Charlie, and because I think we discussed this last week, and they said that it's not their intention to be able to do that, and they're willing to consider an amendment if a constitutional officer were to raise this concern with them or make it clear during floor debate or something like that. They say that that's, you know, they're not looking to use that power in that way, that they just didn't want the gaming board or something like that to be able to go straight to the controller and get a huge salary without, you know, going through the normal channels or limiting it in any way, as a for instance.
Well, then why didn't they define state agency to not include other constitutional officers?
An excellent question. What I also think is interesting about this is that until the day before Governor Rauner made that social media message, both Democrats and Republicans had different versions, but they both cut off at the end of the budget year, which is traditionally how money is spent in Illinois government. You appropriate one year at a time. It expires on June 30th, and it kind of forces everybody. It's sort of a hallmark of good government for more than a century in this country is you have to budget on a semi-regular basis. Look at how much money you have coming in. Look at adjustments you need to make. Do you need to raise revenue? Do you need to cut spending? And the Democrats are saying they're sort of scratching their heads about why the governor wants to just extend this potentially infinitely. And another question that occurs to me is that the governor has been very strongly, he says, against stopgap budgets. And it seems to me that this is just another form of, you know, not really solving the problem and the dispute at the heart of the budget impasse in Illinois, but prolonging things and keeping state government functioning so that this fight can go on, which the core of this fight is essentially, you know, pass the governor's pro-business, anti-union agenda, or actually just negotiate the budget without those agenda items attached to it.
I want to save a little bit of time here to talk about a big political announcement that was made this week, and it was done through through a release and then Facebook and a few interviews as well. But Chris Kennedy, the former U of I Board of Trustee chair and also a businessman and, of course, related to the famous Kennedy family, he is RFK's son, made the announcement he's going to run for governor in 2018 as a Democrat. Jordan, you had a chance to talk with him. Did you gain anything from the reasons that he decided to jump into the race?
I think he, like any other Democrat who's considering running right now, sees the state of Illinois and what has happened the past 2 years and thinks that they have what it takes to fix it. I did ask him why he wants to go to Springfield with such a tense political climate right now, and he actually cited the history in his family and says, I can work across the aisle, I can talk to people, and I know how to do that. I also asked him, why do you want this job? I don't want this job. I don't want to run the state of Illinois right now. It's going to be difficult. It's going to require tough decisions. And he said that he's just seen a lack of leadership over the past couple years. He did attack Governor Rauner at certain points of the interview. And I think he's fully aware that he is going to be attacked. We saw he started his media tour in Chicago the day he announced, and they really hammered his relationship with Speaker Madigan. The Republican Party has attacked him and pegged him to Speaker Madigan since before he even announced he was going to run. And they think that that was a successful formula that they used the last election cycle. And I think we're going to see that continue. I think by the time he came to Springfield, he had a better answer to the Madigan question. He talked about how it was insulting that Republicans would think that he is going to bow down to the Speaker. He is a Kennedy and he speaks for himself and he knows how to handle his own and he's not anyone's lapdog. And so I think by the time he had come to us, he had come up with a better answer to that Madigan question. But I think he did stumble the first day over the Chicago media trying to attach him to the Speaker. And that's a narrative that plays well, particularly on TV, and is easy and simple for people to understand. And so I think that's a question that he's going to have to answer throughout this campaign.
Charlie, the Kennedy name has been pretty much political magic through the years. Does it still hold that same type of bump for a guy that wants to run? Is that going to help him a lot?
Well, I don't think it'll hurt him, but I'm not sure it would have the same drawing power that it would have in past years, because I'm somebody who's old enough who actually can remember when Jack Kennedy was president. But the folks in that cohort, there's not as many of them as there used to be, and I think younger people, that's for them, that's like ancient history. So I don't think it's going to be so much the magic of the name as it is the programs that he can propose or the solutions that he can suggest for how do we move Illinois forward and get out of this terrible mess that we're in because of the standoff basically between the governor and the legislative leader.
And Brian, there's about 30 seconds here or so, but one thing we do know is he does come with his own personal wealth, as does Bruce Rauner. If those two were to square off, for example, or a J.B. Pritzker gets involved in the race, could be an extremely expensive gubernatorial race in 2018.
I think we're already set up to have, by definition, the most expensive gubernatorial race we've ever had. I think the governor spent about $60 million of his own and other people's money last time against $30 million from the Democrat. He is already just stationed at the end of last year, $50 million in his campaign account. That's more than or about 2 years out from the election, and there's plenty more where that came from.
Time now for our notes from the field. And Jordan, let's go to you.
I think what we noticed this week and what I thought was interesting was the influence of federal politics leaking down to the state level. We saw on Wednesday a lot of House Democrats stood up and spoke against policies that the Trump administration has been pushing in their first few weeks in office. We also saw some bills in response to that. Representative Chris Walsh wanted to make immigration safe zones more prominent in the state of Illinois. And so I think we're seeing a lot of influence from the recent presidential election trickle down to state politics here in Illinois.
And Brian.
Well, Governor Rauner has proclaimed himself a jobs governor, and that certainly is true if you are a former employee of Republican Comptroller Leslie Munger. Bernie Schoenberg at the State Journal Register has been doing a great job tracking this story. By his count, at least 29 people have been hired who were sort of out, so to speak, after Leslie Munger lost to Comptroller Susana Mendoza, the Democrat. And as of late last week, that now includes the former Comptroller Leslie Munger herself, hired at $135,000 a year, deputy governor, the same salary she was making when the voters decided she should no longer be our controller.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast today include Shirley Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Jordan Abadea. You can get a podcast of this show by going to nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.